You were talking about your mother's. Your mother, I think, got some abuse because her brothers were in the army.
My brothers, yeah. Mm-hmm. They, at the start of the Troubles, they people abused her on the street because they were in the army.
So was your brothers?
I had two brothers, you know. Mm-hmm. You see, we really, my mummy's own daddy and my granddad on my daddy's side and my great-granddad were all in the army. So I think my brothers were just following suit, you know.
Did that sort of abuse carry on, or...?
No, it stopped. It did stop. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it must have just got fed up, you know. And it did stop. And my brother actually moved out. When he came home off the army, he moved to live somewhere else, so... maybe not seeing him or whatever, you know.
What do you think? I mean, when did you first become aware of the Troubles?
I became aware of the Troubles the night that they burned the mills on the falls. I was living in the Antrim Road. And we had slept right through the night and we didn't know till we woke up. Somebody had said the Falls Road's burning. That was the first we knew that, well, naturally we came over to see it was my mummy all night. And we saw the devastation. It was awful.
Where did your mother live?
She lived on the falls. She lived just off the Grosvenor Road.
And you came over the next morning?
We came over that the next morning when we heard that it was burning to see was everybody all right in the war. But it was just the main Falls Road was the worst. You know, the mills and the... There was no houses then burned, I don't think. I can't remember any houses been burned. Just the bank and the bank and all the mills right up the road. It was just like walking in out of a time warp into another one. It was awful.
You told me a story about two men driving you to Turf Lodge, remember that?
Oh yes, about the wee boy not been well. My wee boy had taken a very bad eye. It was really, really terrible. But there was a wee bit of I don't know what it was to this story. There was a bus that took people down to the Royal Hospital to give blood. And I went round, it was like a first aid, and I took the wee boy around. It was only about five. And they said, look, we're taking people on a bus down to the Royal, we'll take them. You come with them. So we came with them. I went with them and we came down to the Royal and the doctor, they said, leave him here and you stay with him and we'll get a doctor to see him. But the doctor that day, he was a coloured doctor, he was in doing an operation and he came out and he said, oh my God, what an eye. I don't know what it was, but I mean, you thought he'd got punched in the eye. So he gave him like a cream, but we waited that long and the doctor coming out of the theatre when we got out the bus had gone. So I was standing on the Falls Road with the jail and it was like a ghost town. I mean, there was not one single person on that road. So these two fellas came in a car, they were workmen, and they said, where are you going? And I said, look, I'm going to Turf Lodge. And he says, look, get in, we'll bring you up, we're going up that way. So they were going to Norfolk, so they dropped me off and I walked on. But about a few weeks later, I brought him back to the hospital. He was to go back again. And I brought him back to the hospital. And it was a very strange thing because when I brought him back, they couldn't find the doctor. I gave a description of the doctor. There's no such a doctor on that day. There was no such a doctor in theatre that day of that description. And I stood and argued with her and I says, well then, who treated him? Who gave him the cream, the ointment for his eye? He definitely did get this ointment, and it was a coloured doctor, a young doctor, curly hair and blah. They didn't know nothing, but his eye healed up after about 3 days. So, which was, I said, oh my God, was that a guardian angel?
And your two men that drove you up home?
Yeah, the two workmen, one was an the elderly man and the other one's the young fella. They must have been working, but whether they were working, I don't know, because I mean, it was really eerie that day.
What time of the day would that have been?
It was about 5 o'clock.
But the road was just
the
empty.
Road, there wasn't a bus, there wasn't a car, there wasn't a taxi, nothing. And I saw the car, I was ready, prepared to walk, when they stopped and said, where are you going, we'll take you, where are you going? Which was very good of them.
So you moved across from the Antrim Road then to Turf
Lodge? I moved across from the Antrim Road over to Turf Lodge, yeah.
When would that have been around?
That would have been 19, would have been May. When I moved, my wee boy was only a wee baby. He was about a year old. He's 40 now. 42. I would have been about 41 years ago. Well, we were in a rented house, you see, and in the Antrim Road, it was just a rented house, and then the housing executive got us a flat.
A
Turf Lodge, yeah.
And what was the difference between living on the Antrim Road?
There was a big difference, an awful big difference. The Antrim Road was quiet and, you know, people were going about their business, where when we went to Turf Lodge, you couldn't get out the shops, it was shooting. You know, from the Springfield Road, they were shooting down in the Turf Lodge, and at times, I can't really remember, but at times I think, then again, they'd have been shooting from Turf Lodge, but mainly Johnson, it was in the Turf Lodge.
No,
it was the Army.
The Army?
Yeah, it definitely was the Army, because I went out one day to the shops and a bullet missed me. I heard it whizzing past my ear. There was a bit of a lull, and my aunt lived a wee bit further down. She says to me, look, run now, go now, and I went to run. Like, it was a bad thing I done, because they might have thought I was a gunman. You know, it was a stupid thing I done. But the bullet, I heard it actually whizzing past me here. I was very lucky.
Frightening experience.
Oh, very frightening. Mm-hmm. Was.
You talked about it was a difficult time to raise children.
Very.
One of the things you talked about was a particular day that there was a rumour that there may have been a shooting to be. And you talked about, you know, that when you heard the rumour, obviously you took the children in off the streets.
Yeah, yeah. Every time there was a terrible lot of rumours went around, all the time, get the children in, there's going to be a gun battle. And, you know, the poor kids were more often in the house than what they were on out playing. You know, you had to try and occupy them in the house because, and they were getting wanting out and couldn't get out to play football, you couldn't take them to the park, you were afraid of it in case you didn't get back. But you had to try. My wee boy was in the Star Wars, and we used to buy him all the Star Wars stuff just to keep him in. Now, he was very good at sitting in, but the wee girl wasn't. She just wanted constantly out. And it was very hard, you had to keep her in.
What years was that? I mean, I'm just thinking if we did the 40, my math is terrible, but if we're talking you moved in 41 years ago.
Yeah.
You moved in the Turf Lodge then.
About 72. Yeah, about 72. So,
did that go on for a long time in terms of advocating the children in, or was that a particular period of time?
No, that went on the whole time you were living there.
Mm-hmm.
That really did. You were sort of up and down for years. That definitely up and down for years.
We also talked about a time when that kind of threat came very close to your family, because I think it was a result of mistaken identity, but there was a gun put to your...
Oh yeah, down. This was when I was living up here, on the Springfield Road. We were in bed one night. My oldest son then was about 16, 17, and he had bad asthma, and he couldn't sleep at night. And he got up and he was in the living room and our door got kicked in. There was a dissident feud. Mm-hmm. And when we got down the stairs, by the time we got out, my youngest daughter was in the youngest son was standing at the top of the stairs, just looking, and there was a gunman lying on his stomach, sort of, you know, on the stairs like that. And he was pointing the gun at the two wee ones. And Jackie was shouting, "Oh, don't, oh, don't, you've got the wrong house, you've got the wrong house." And there was one, we didn't know at the time, there was one actually in the living room. So whoever they were looking for probably thought, whoever this will be, he'll be sleeping on the settee, which my son was. And when one of them shouted the other one, "It's not him, it's not him, get out, get out." So they ran into the house next door and they said to the girl, "What's your name, what's your name?" And he wouldn't give his name. He says, "It's got nothing to do with you." And they actually put the gun to that fella's head. And when we got out, my son said they put him up against the wall with the gun to the back of his head. They pushed him against the wall and they'd gone to the back of his head. So he could have been shot dead that night. But we do know the house that they were, the way the houses were situated, that's the, was the mistake. They were given, must have been given, told where the house was. And instead of one street, the third house in one street, they took the third house in the first street instead of the second street.
They got the wrong street.
They got the wrong street. Luckily that night, nobody was hurt or injured. The only thing that fell next door to us was ready to explode. Like, he wanted to go after, which was a stupid thing. And a temper, like, you'll do an awful lot. But we advised him, don't go near, don't go, you know, after them. It's ski masks and everything on them. It was really, really frightening. It was frightening. Mm-hmm. But we never had, like, after that, we never knew more bother of any sort like that, you know. But still.
Difficult time to raise children.
Yeah, you didn't want them to see that. You didn't even want them, you were trying to keep them away from that, not let them get. We used to turn off the news at night if there had been a bomb or shooting, or we used to turn the news off. We wouldn't have let them see it because we definitely did not want them involved. And they said, we just said to them, no, we'll keep it off to 7 o'clock or whatever. But then you had to come in the our house, like, you just coming in. So you couldn't stop them from saying that, you know. And my wee ones, like, I mean, they were in shock for days. And why did that man do that? What do you want? Who was he going to shoot? Who was he going to shoot and why? Was, you know, kids are curious. What were they doing and why were they doing it? What do you say to them? You know, especially when you're trying to keep them away from it. Keep it away from them.
Yes.
You know?
You spoke a few times about ratting kind of in the local area here.
Oh, yeah.
It was like ratting at the garage.
Oh, God. That was funny, hadn't it? It used to be ratting all the time. We got used to it, you know, we just said after. It'll go over in an hour or so, they'll get fed up, they'll all go home to bed. But one night...
And where exactly was there at?
Just about here. Uh-huh. Just about where we are now.
Where was the garage situated?
I would say the garage would have been... I think the garage would have been just down a wee bit where the wall was. You know, the piece wall?
On this side of the road?
Yeah, on this side. There was like an... there was a garage and they were all ratting one night and... We got out, we were getting out to make sure none of ours get them all in. And this girl, there was an old man living the other side of the road, he lived on his own. And this girl, she was a single girl, she went up to make sure, I think you called him Paddy, he was a wee piano teacher. Paddy was all right, so she got smashed up the head with a brick. So she was lying at the corner. It was so funny, and it wasn't funny. She was lying at the corner and the blood was pouring out of her head. So her friend decided, I'm going to go up and I'm going to see if she's all right. So she got up and she got hit and she was lying at the corner. So then there was casualties on this side of the road. So this ambulance flies up the road collects the injured from this side of the road, puts them in the ambulance, comes over to this side of the road, puts the injured from this side of the road into the ambulance, so all the riders were in the ambulance together. And we were sent that ambulance up a rocking and rolling down that road for all the but know what I mean? Like they were beating the hell out of each other, and then next thing they're all put in the ambulance and took to the hospital. You know, and through it all there were funny times, real funny, but most of the times you were scared out of your wits. You really were scared. You know, you didn't ran. All right, people got injured during ran. But Ren wasn't as serious as shooting. It was the shooting you had to watch, you know. Once you heard the shooting, up, as that everybody was indoors, closed, locked yourself in.
The rat was going on really outside your front door then?
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was, because this area was wide open and our area was wide open. So the rat sort of ended up on the middle of the road. And, I don't know, traffic.
There was no wall at that point?
No wall, no. Just streets and derelict buildings, you know, where shopkeepers had got out.
Do you remember what sort of year that would have been?
I would say, our Nathan was born.
Uh-huh.
So that would have been 24 years ago.
24 years ago, so again,
89. He was born in 88.
So the rat's outside your front door?
It was. Literally outside your front door.
Do you have a one-year-old in the house?
What is it, John?
Do you have a one-year-old in the house?
We had a what, baby? Mm-hmm. He actually one night fell. He was on a baby walker and he fell down steps and he'd cut his head. And we picked him up to take him to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And we were coming out onto the front of the road and somebody threw a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned to go down the back way and the army were coming up and they said, well, is there anything wrong? And he says, there's a wee bit of rain out there. I says, somebody's only out there throwing a big brick. I says, look at you, he's already cut his head, he fell. We're taking him to the hospital. So they come up and says, look, it's all right. It's all right, just you go on. And we'll go out and sort this out. So they told us just to go on down the back. They'll get him checked out. And that was scary too, because we didn't know how badly hurt Nathan was, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but the head, you know, we needed to get him.
Yeah, of course. So who tended to be involved in the riot?
All the fellas. There was girls too, like, it wasn't just.
Well, who's riding home? Like, is it them? Protestant Catholics?
Oh, Protestant Catholic was definitely.
It wasn't with the army?
Oh, no. It was two sides, two different sides. No, the army would have came along maybe and, you know, that they all scattered. But then it came back again when the army went. So, like, it was a case of.
Your recollection is it was pretty persistent?
Oh, yeah. It was every night, nearly. Nearly every single night, and then but the flush where it is there, you got people then running down there thinking, oh, these people's coming over the flush and they're going to come down, they'll be in the streets, you know. People were terrible. One night there was a real bad riot, and I mean it was really terrible, and everybody was shouting and panicking and screaming. Everybody was up. I think it was a couple of houses wrecked that night, and it was awful. It was really like, what would you say? It was like nearly been in the heart of the troubles again.
Yes.
Because everybody was out in their pajamas, slippers, screaming, shouting, get the police, get the army, get the papers, get, you know. And I don't think anybody slept the rest of that night. It was, and to be quite honest with you, Johnson, see that peace wall, it's a godsend at the time. Because, I mean, it kept the two sides apart, and you got a night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
When did it start to go up then?
I can't really. I remember them building it, but I can't remember the year.
Uh-huh. But it's after Nathan was born, anyway.
It was after Nathan was born, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you think you coped all the way through the trouble?
I don't know. I don't know how anybody coped. I really don't. I often say that even now. How did we cope? And if it ever, God forbid, should happen again, could we ever cope again? I don't think you could. Because I keep saying, if anything like that ever happened again, I wouldn't be here. I'd get out. When you're younger, you can sort of make your way through it, you know what I mean? But I think as you get older, you just don't want that. Don't think anybody wants that. For like at the time, it was bad enough. It's when you have young children, you're afraid for them. It would be my grandchildren that I would, you know, if it ever anything ever happened, it would be them that I would worry about.
Yes.
I know Nathan's very sensible. And but it would be the younger grandchildren, no, the the teenagers, like, it would be them. I would be. But in saying that, Johnson, now, it wouldn't be the troubles now you have to worry about. It's violence from within the community. Among each other. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think now Protestant and Catholic are starting to come together, which is a good thing. I can see a lot of it. Friendships have been made through, but it's coming now from within our own communities.
You spoke about remembering some rioting down another way. Actually,
oh, yes, the protesting. We were only 9 months in the street when my youngest son witnessed a shooting. A fellow was shot dead at the top of our street, and he was actually in the garden when the fellow was shot dead. So the people decided to get out and block Lanark Way because they said they took that route to escape, right? And there was rioting down there. And the one side was coming out because the Catholics were in Lanark Way with placards and whatever. And actually one fella got knocked down, a car sped up and hit him. So that started a full-scale riot there, you know. And it was bad there too then. But then things seemed to settle again, you know. It was bad what happened to the fella in our street, but people sort of.
What was the name of the guy?
John Judge.
Ah, yes.
Remember? John. The hurting part.
Was his kid's
birthday party. My wee boy had been at the birthday party. He was 12, him and his friend. And they were standing tall. It was a terrible night because we didn't have the railings on the top of our walls at the time. Of my wall. My wall just went straight round, and Jackie was sitting on the wall with his back out towards the Springfield, and there was a mini series on, and I called him in and I says, I'm going to make a cup of tea. So you wanted to watch this mini series, come on in. It was a beautiful night. So we opened the door was lying open, both doors were lying open, and he lay down on the settee to watch this mini series, and the next thing we heard was the shooting. So I ran out, I got out before him, I was in the hall, he grabbed me by the back of the neck and pulled me in. And we stood behind it. We had like a glass panel. We stood behind it, and there was three guys come running down the street after two other fellows that was with John Judge. So as soon as they got into a car at our door, and away they went. But as soon as they went, we ran up the street, and my wee girl, who was only about 12 at the time, I know she would have been 14, she says, Daddy, is somebody lying here? And he had worked in the hospital, and he had done the first aid thing, and he ran into the grave, and he done the first pulse, and he said, no, he's dead, he's definitely dead. And it was awful, Johnson, his brains was lying beside him, and they shot him in the back of the head, and my wee boy couldn't be found, and he couldn't be found for half an hour. And when the police and all came, we went up and we says, my wee boy was in that garden, we can't find him. And he says, look.
He was at the party.
He was at the party. But what happened was, when they saw the car coming, the pulled on mask, my wee boy said to his wee friend, there's a sneak attack. And he told me after it, he thought it was ARA coming and then he kept somebody. So they all, it wasn't funny, but it was. They all ran in and locked him out, locked my son out. So he was crafty enough to run around the side of the house and lie on his stomach on the ground, and he witnessed the whole killing. So when they went away, the detective came down with him, and he says, "Is this your wee boy here?" And we said, "Yeah, where was he?" He says, "Well, he's in shock here," and he says, "He was lying around the side of the house, and from what he's told us, we need to interview him." And I says, "Well, look, you'll not be interviewing him tonight, because look at the state he's in. Maybe, lad, never now. He's 34 now, and he has never, ever got over that. He used to wake up screaming that there was a man with a gun at the window, looking in at him, and you know, all these different." And then he was running back and forward, giving statements, and you know, and then we had to go because we were all involved. The whole street was involved. You know, everybody, and it was terrible that time too for that girl and her three kids too.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people moved out. Johnson, if you'd have seen the people that moved out that street after.
Oh.
It was about 8 families moved out, yeah. But we said, why should we move out? I mean, we had got good houses. We had lived in dumps for years. And we had got good houses, and we said, no, we're not going to move. You know, so we started.
But there was a very high level of fear.
Oh, very. Everybody was watching everybody, and you see, no matter who came in the street, there was a stranger. You know, you were in your door looking out to see who they were looking for. You were afraid to open the door. And the housing executive actually put in, you know, the peepholes, so that if anybody came to your door, you could see them, see who they were, and, you know.
But they didn't close
Lanark Way? They didn't close it, no. It was only later that I think they put the gates on, because there was a lot of protesting and people, you know, fighting to get gates on, to get it closed at a certain time at night, so that cars couldn't use it as a getaway. And it was that fella's death that they never wanted it in the first place. People kept saying, no, it would be too handy for things to happen, for them to go back up again. But then, the protesting and all, and then that fella being shot, they had to put the gates on. Although I know it's awkward for the people, because there's good people living on this side of the road. But, I mean, it was just like, you know, either close these people off or get somebody shot, you know, which is a better option. You know, I do feel sorry for the people here, because if there is a fire, or if there's somebody needs to go to a hospital or a heart attack or a wee baby sick, it is a detour for them. You know, if they detour right round, they get, it's not fair either.
Well, the other way opened up. Was the wall already there?
I think it was, yeah. I'm near sure it was. Can't remember really how far back, but I'm nearly sure it was. I think the two were sort of done together.
You were saying that, you know, one of the ways that people coped was the humour of the situation, you know, just the...
Yeah.
It was almost like a survival.
That's what it was. It was make the best of what's happening, you know. You just went along. You tried to live normal. You tried to do... It was only when something happened, like a real bad... You know what I mean? You say, maybe a bomb explosion or... That the fear really hit you, you know. Other than that, you were trying to live as normal as you could. You know, you were going, doing your shopping, you were going to the schools, you were... I don't know, honestly, I don't know how people survived it. I don't know. Somebody must have given them just to go ahead and... Because how anybody... Looking back now, you don't know how you done it. You know?
Are there any particular moments that stand out that's kind of more lighthearted for you?
There's a few things. I mean, I think people then, Johnson, stuck together more. They helped each other out. Now that it's sort of calmed down, people's in and they're living different lives that don't want to know, and I don't know. I said to Jackie, yes, I just got that, like, really, I tell you something, people have changed from the Troubles. And honestly, Johnson, I don't care what anybody says, there's people who live with mental illnesses from it. You can see it in people's attitudes and in the way they get on. Like some people aren't coping too well without the Troubles. For all them years you were living a certain way, and then you may say sort of overnight it stopped. You know, so people had to change their whole attitude. And honestly, I don't know. I know, like, it's a terrible, terrible thing if it ever, God forbid, ever cropped up again. I don't know what people would do. I wouldn't be here. I honestly wouldn't be here. You know?
When we were in the big group, some of the women were remembering the excitement of the soldiers' first arrival.
Oh, yeah.
And going to discos and stuff for the soldiers.
Yeah.
I think you said that you knew lots of girls who actually had babies for the soldiers.
Oh, yeah. I know about five from around our area that had babies to soldiers. And I remember one girl who actually later on became a neighbour of mine, and her daddy actually went down to Albert Street Barrack and put a poster up, please do not let this girl into the disco, his daughter, keep her out. No, honestly. And she says, I was raging at my daddy. But at the end of the day, they're human beings too. You know, they're like you and me, only they're wearing a uniform. And
so when some of these girls ended up, like, marrying and living with the soldiers?
Oh, yeah, I know one girl. My friend's sister married a soldier. And they went to England to live, which was a very wise thing to do. And she has a daughter now, a model. Her daughter is absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And she came home with a baby and all for her sister's wedding. You know, it was when things were starting to sort of calm down. She stayed away now until things did calm down, and then she came home for her sister's wedding.
Well, I suppose when you think about it, I don't know if it was like this or not, but I mean, the peculiar thing was that they, when the soldiers first arrived, they tended to be made welcome.
The people.
The Catholic community. Yeah. So you can understand young soldiers, girls.
Yes, going with the soldiers with the uniform.
Yeah, whatever way it works out. But then, of course, in a relatively short period of time, then the soldiers become unwelcome.
They became the enemy.
So that makes it difficult for girls caught up in that.
That situation, yeah. They became targets too then. Mm-hmm. You know, they were told no, and even women. I met one woman, a soldier was shot dead. Well, he wasn't dead, he was dying. And she went out and she put a pillow under his head and a blanket around him. And she held him till the ambulance came. And that woman never got peace to live, but never gave in. You know, she held her own and she lived in her house. She's still in it. And she refused to. She ignored them when they shouted at her and whatever. One day I heard her turning around and shouting, well, at least I'm a Christian, I'm not like you, I'm not an animal. You know, and like, no matter what your feelings were, how could you walk past somebody that's hurt? You know what I mean? How you couldn't do it. And she says, she was in the shop one time and she was saying, well, it could have been my son. That's the way I look at it, he could have been my son. I'd like somebody to know somebody with him to help him.
This is just a small thing, but you mentioned something about soldiers barracked in, was it Bear Foster School?
Oh yeah, up the road here. Yeah, that was, I think that's where that Owen Bale home is now. Mm-hmm. There was soldiers up there.
And what did you call the school?
Bear Foster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, it may have been a wee bit further back, Bear Foster. Mm-hmm. I know there was a billet up there, and they were really all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, everywhere you went, you just saw soldiers billeted. And the Springfield Road there, they were down there too.
I remember seeing a photograph of a lookout post, like at the, what was, corner of Cashmere Street or something?
Cashmere Road.
Cashmere
yeah,
Road
there was. Right. They took over. It was a doctor's house. It was a big old house. And they took that over too. Mm-hmm. They were in there too.
So you were living like, surrounded by soldiers?
You were surrounded by them, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You
and
were.
So how did that make things for everyday life?
Well, nothing. If you went past that, there was nothing said. There was no words spoken, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at good night, people might have given the odd dirty look and whatever passing, but I mean, there was no real animosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was nothing really. And there was to be quite honest, then you were not so much afraid when they were about, because you knew they wouldn't have let anything happen to you. You know, you sort of felt a wee bit secure that way, because you knew, well, there's an army post there, I'd be all right walking down that road. There's an army post, and if anything happens, they'd come out, you know. You did feel a bit more secure with them, and I don't know about anybody else, but I did.
Mm-hmm. You also said to me that when you were in Turflock, they were the ones that were shooting in over.
Yeah, they were, yeah, honestly. Now, I don't know the guys in Turf Lodge, whoever they were, could have been shooting out, I don't know.
Yes, yes.
But I just remember that particular day that they fired in, and a friend, my aunt's cousin, he was shot dead by them on internment day. He was shot up in the field up there, and then, you know, you got caught up in it too, because when you heard that, oh, so-and-so's been shot dead, you know, you went, oh my God, they're bad, they shouldn't be doing that, and, you know, and you did feel hatred, but then it wore off again, you know, you say to yourself, well, they're fighting a war, you know, he was an innocent victim, but they were fighting a war, you know. And I think all the innocent victims, it was all innocent victims that did. They were the worst off because they weren't doing anything.
Yes.
The gunmen had guns in their hands. These people hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you felt angry, because they're shooting innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
And these other men with the guns running about is getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's even like now, you know, you get these beating people beating each other up, and they're innocent, you know. And these dissidents and all's getting walking about with guns, and nobody seems to be interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Overall, how do you feel things are for you now in terms of life?
Brilliant. Really, really brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You have more freedom. You can do what you want. You can go where you want. You can. Yeah, actually, I think you can even speak out more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we were downstairs and there was talk,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody says something, you wouldn't get offended. You know, maybe a Protestant woman says something. You join in, you say, yeah, that's right there. Do you know what happened on our side? And you know what's happening now? And we're all in agreement that, you know, these men are making out of this. We're the victims here, not them. They're making the money while we're sitting back taking the hassle of it all. And honestly, I think that now things are brilliant. Really, really good.
That's not a bad note to end on.
No, it's not. Honestly, Johnson, I am. I sometimes say to myself, I know we've lived through it and all, but I think it has taught us to appreciate life now as it is. You know, that our kids are growing up, they have kids of their own, and you're even appreciating them kids and all. Where then, when the troubles was on, you hadn't really time, you know, you were forever, get you in, get you up the stairs, don't you be going out, where did he go, where did she go, and you were coat on, you were away, get you in, you were told, you know, you were sort of hounding your kids then.
Yes.
Hounding them, and I told you not to do this, and I told you not to do that. you know, we're now the kids have that wee bit of freedom, and if they are out late, you're not worried so much. You know, we have a wee grandson comes to stay, and God love me, he's in to 10:30 every night. But if he's 5 minutes late, it used to be, oh my God, where is he? He's not. Where now you're saying to yourself, he'll be all right. He's held up, and he can relax more. You know, where then, if he had been 5 minutes late, you'd have been nearly ringing hospitals. You know, where is he, or what's happening to him? Or did he go missing? Is anybody, you know, beat him up, whatever? Well, that's all gone now. You know? We're a bit more happier. Even walking to work in the dark nights and all, during the, I don't know, how we used to come up in a gang, you would say, and like nobody would have attacked us because I was the youngest and the rest were in their 60s. You know, and if anything had happened, I remember getting out of work early one night, my boss let me out early.
Where were you working?
In the Royal. Uh-huh. And I said, could I go home early? I need to get home. Certainly you go. She let me go and a bomb went off at Springfield Road Barrack. And it went off just as I hit my own house. And the next night I went in here, she said, you know something? And I said, well, here she's. My heart was in my mouth last night. I says, why? She says, like I'd have got caught on letting you go early. I says, never mind that I could have been blue to bits. You were worried about getting caught up. We laughed that night about that. But that was the sort of thing you did laugh about, you know. But that was a risk you took. If I had waited 10, 15 minutes, I could have been caught up in that. I've had lucky escapes, like.
Yes.
You know, and I think that applies to everybody. You know, people come and say, hey, look, oh, really, hear what happened to me. I was nearly shot, or I was nearly blew up, or I was hurt, or, you know. But you don't have that fear now. That fear's gone.
So when you're leaving the world, you're going to come up often as a sort of gang, or is just
work? Oh, yeah, crap. We used to wait them. We all worked in different places, but we all at the front gate used to be open at night. They used to open the gate at 9 and let us all out. So we all used to stand 5 to 9 and all meet up. And then anybody lived up here, we all worked up, walked up the gap. You know, and I was always the last to leave because the rest all sort of lived further down. And I used to have to walk that better. But what I did was I cut through one of the streets and come up the back. I never ever walked the front.
Because that was like an interface?
That was like an interface, yeah. And yet you don't know what. A rat could have started, drop of a hat.
And so the Royal was kind of locked up? They opened the gateways?
Yeah, they locked it up and opened it at 9 o'clock and let us
so
all
they out. Locked it up because just for security?
Security reasons, yeah. They did, yeah. But there was two ways in, but the main one was the false road entrance. So and then people came out of there and got their taxis up the road and or walked up or, you know, We would all, and if you'd say honestly, that was like a pensioners convention, mm-hmm. all hobbling up the road,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, and then a girl came to live up beside me that worked in the Royal, which was better for me because then I'd company the whole way up, you know. Many's a night me and her run that road,
mm-hmm.
ran up the road. If we'd have heard a noise, the two of us was waiting, you know, fire coming out of our heels to get in the house. You know, but it's all away now, Johnson, thank God. It's all gone.
So, Marion.
This is a truck.
Marion.
Oh, sorry.
How do you feel things are in your area since the Good Friday Agreement?
They are a lot better.
Mm-hmm. What way are they better?
Well, there's no rat and there's no troubles, no getting peace just. But, the only thing is, it's among our own now.
There's internal.
Internal, that's got worse. From the three. Oh, yeah.
There's three groups.
Oh, yeah.
No, just in our area.
No, in the area, neighbours and all.
Mm-hmm.
They've got worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because the executive's throwing everything and anything into the empty houses. The houses, it's gone down. But for everything else, it's quietly.
So it's more social than political.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're thinking, Alan, like, I mean, how does life change for you remember you telling me about how during the Troubles it was all the worry of your children and stuff, and bringing the children up?
It's great. They go out now, and I mean, they're adults, so obviously, but I don't even think about it. They go out mad.
So life's more relaxed?
Life is much more relaxed, but what I will say, and I think this is general.
Yes.
Helps me to get on with it. Since the army's not on the streets, and believe me, they give me lots of hassle in the area that I live, not me personally, in the area that I live, it's not as safe for guards to walk the street. There's more, I think there's more crimes against women.
Because there's less
likelihood of people getting caught. You never knew where the army was. So you never knew where the army was or where it ran about. But I think the attacks on women, physical attacks on women, have increased.
So you were saying there, Dorothy, what peace process?
Well, I mean, you're still getting young fellas shot. Yeah. Young fellas are still getting brutalized.
Uh-huh.
And policemen, you know, they're trying to attack them. Mm-hmm. You know, both sides. So I wouldn't call it a complete peace process.
How is your life different?
Well, I think it is good that mothers can let their teenagers go out and not have to worry, because in my day it was different. So it's good in that way. So it is.
And they mix them more, aren't they, Dorothy?
Uh-huh. But I wonder, will there ever be
peace? Do you think the young people are mixing more now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Because they come back into the town and they're going to, you know, bars and clubs and whatever they go to now, and it's much
mixing.
More mixing.
They're mixing. Yeah.
Town's a lot busier, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Do you notice that?
Yeah. It is a lot. They're around Bellavery's, Robinson's, all around.